listening to CKUT. The following is a previously broadcast program. Stay tuned.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to CKUT 90.3 live this evening. My name is Noah Geoffroy. I'm here with my co-hosts, Sequoia and Wendy.
Hello, hello.
Hello.
And today we have a very special program for you. We are focusing on the recent student strikes in response to the Quebec government's tuition hike. So we have a very special panel of guests in the studio right now. Would you mind introducing yourselves?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Emma Reddy. I'm the co-president of the McGill Undergraduate Geography Society.
And my name is Stefan. I am a member of the McGill Undergraduate Geography Society as well.
My name is Emily McDougall, and I'm the VP External for the Religious Studies Undergraduate Society.
Hi, my name is Hannah Jackson, and I'm the External Affairs and Mobilization Coordinator for the Concordia Student Union.
Sweet. Well, all right, Wendy, if you want to kick it off with an opening question.
Yeah, of course. So this week, students from various departments at Concordia and McGill have been striking against the tuition hikes that will come into effect next year. There have been various events going on throughout the week, from film screenings to panels to workshops to zine making. Could you tell us how this week went? What have been some of the highlights?
For sure. I mean, I can start by just explaining how many of us exactly are on strike. So currently, the number of students represented by various associations is over 11,000 students. So at McGill, we have obviously geography and religious studies. And at Concordia, there are 11 undergraduate departments and one graduate department. So I think that's geography, School of Community and Public Affairs, sociology and anthropology, urban planning, history, graduate geography, English, the science college, biochemistry, chemistry and physics, women's studies, communications, and political science. So it is a, from the Concordia perspective, it's about 30% of our total student body. Is represented by the associations who are on strike. So it's been big. It's been really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and from the McGill side also, we obviously have smaller numbers, but we've all been really into, like, giving people more education about what's happening. We've been making connections, talking to people from other departments in the hopes that, you know, we can turn this into something bigger later on in the year.
Awesome. Oh, did you want to add something?
No.
Okay, cool.
I agree.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, so I have a question for Hannah specifically at the Concordia side. So we've seen, as you mentioned, that there are nearly 11,000 students on strike, as you just mentioned.
Over 11,000.
Over 11,000. Yes. A lot of different departments. I mean, that's a pretty staggering number, if I do say so myself. Does it feel like there's 11,000 people striking? Like, can you kind of give us, like, the picture on campus? What's the tone? What's the mood? What's the participation been like?
For sure. My own department is actually going to kill me because I forgot to say that the entire Faculty of Fine Arts, of which I'm a student, is also on strike. So most of what I've been doing with my time has been with the Faculty of Fine Arts. And so from that perspective, you know, we shut down an entire building completely for 3 days. The arts building, the VA arts building. So we've been at just outside the front doors, and only a single professor crossed the picket line. So that feels like a major success. The vibe on campus was interesting because basically, I've been seeing a huge reduction in students just milling about from Wednesday to Friday. On Wednesday, there was still a fair amount of students, especially in Hall Building, which is one of our busiest downtown buildings. But it's getting quiet. It's getting sort of empty progressively over time, because I think a lot of students that first day didn't know they were on strike. Because it can be difficult to engage, especially this many department associations and also the really large ones. But from my perspective, it seems like we have these initial encounters with students, letting them know about the strikes, and a lot of them haven't come back. A lot of them didn't come back to campus. So that's been pretty exciting. Loyola campus is pretty further out, so we've had a little bit less engagement there and less sort of hard picketing happening there. But I think hall building is really like the center of activity for us. We've had the entire seventh floor, which is the student floor, full of teach-ins and workshops and free food and a dispatch, a person that you go to who will tell you what classroom you need to go to picket, and a million signal chats. It's hectic at a hall, and the fine arts buildings that I've been going to, empty. Really empty.
Well, on the McGill side then, because we've been hearing a lot about Concordia. I mean, even me personally, you know, on social media, you get a lot of like Concordia publicity, a lot of people talking about like strike initiatives. What's the mood been like at McGill? Like, what have you guys seen around campus?
It's been a bit different, I think, than the Concordia version, because I think that it's obviously, like, even historically, McGill's faculty associations, it's been very difficult for them to go on strike. Even in 2012, like, AUS for the Arts Undergraduate Society was, like, just about to go on strike in response to that, and then they didn't. And so, like, it's been frequently just difficult for us to kind of mobilize, I think. And so the departments who have mobilized are quite small, and it's, in my own experience, like, the Religious Studies School has about 60-something program undergraduate students in minors, majors, and honors, which in some ways is great because, you know, we know a lot of those people, we have that community, but at the same time, it's very difficult to mobilize them because they're all kind of scattered out and they're not very, we've been, our SUS has been, I guess, a bit dormant for the past couple years as well, and so we've lost some of that, like, connection with their organization between students, and so I've found that this week most people just didn't know what we were doing, and kind of didn't understand, you know, I think that at McGill it just hasn't, it's been encouraged at a departmental level to go on strike, which is in some ways better, like, we can create these, like, smaller, more community-based movements, but at the same time, like, it's very difficult for small organizations across campus to kind of have that, like, solidarity and that collective movement if we kind of have little groups of people scattered over campus.
So also, like, geography, we have 468 students, I believe, so significantly bigger, but it's kind of been, at least in where we've been kind of stationed, Burnside building, it's been a core group of like 10 to 20 people kind of leading the pickets, leading the tabling, educating people. So it's been tiring, but overall we'd say relatively successful.
Yeah, and while we recognize that the two departments, you know, between us at McGill currently on strike is not a very, you know, significant or even close to what Concordia is experiencing at the moment, really, our goal here is this is the start of something bigger. We really want this to be kind of just the first igniter, catalyst for other departments and other students to get involved in the discussion. As I think for us, in our perspective, we've noticed that the conversation around these tuition hikes have been quite centered from the administrative side. So how this impacts the university administration, like McGill and Concordia, but less so the students, which is obviously like the most important factor here, right? These universities are fundamentally, you know, they live and die based on their students. And so if we don't prioritize the students in the conversation, we really think we're missing out on a huge part of our ability to voice our concerns. And so we really think that what we're doing now is really just a start of something bigger down the road.
And on that note, like, why do you guys think there's such a difference in participation between Concordia and McGill students? Like, is it a difference between how the strikes were voted on or something else? I know it's a big question, but do you guys have any thoughts or just first, you know, first opinions?
I think it's kind of like what Emily was talking about of just we don't have as strong of a history of striking, which definitely makes it difficult to bring up that conversation with people. And it's also our campus is like not as centralized maybe. I don't know if Hall kind of serves as like the central point of a lot of student affairs at Concordia, which we don't have that as much. People, you know, if you're not in geography, you're not coming to our building. So it's, I think that's been part of the problem is we're just too spread out.
And I definitely think some of the success that I would attribute to the amount of people who decided to go on strike at Concordia is it was definitely a domino effect. And I think what really ignited it, at first it was just geography students were the first Concordia students to go on strike. So there's something cool happening in geography. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm going to switch. But they started it, but last week, not to continue to rep my own faculty, but FASA, the entire Fine Arts Student Assembly, we only needed 15 people to vote to go on strike, and 117 people showed up.
Wow.
So six times the quorum that we needed, and the vote was 115 yes to no.
Wow.
So it was a near unanimous vote from an entire faculty, which has actually never happened at Concordia. So that happened a week ago. And so I think really once people realized, it's like a bandwagon effect. Once people realize that other people are on strike, we had some unanimous strike votes from certain associations. So everyone who had planned a GA, knowing that other they would be joining this growing group of people, I think really motivated people in a way that if no one else was going on strike, it was discouraging. So I think that was really our strength, is that we saw a lot of people go on strike at once because an entire faculty went, and then these little departments, they all kind of followed suit. But we had our last strike GA on the first day of the strike. So a lot of this was very last minute, really down to the wire, which was very exciting. But then the struggle is, how do we sustain that? And if a department association decides to go on strike a day before the strike, are they ready? You know, but I really agree with what you said earlier about how this is a start. This was really a structure test, a way for us to see, can a strike happen right now? Is there energy for it? Is there impetus? Is there momentum? And how do we figure out the logistics? And I think we've learned a lot and we've engaged a lot of people. And that way I feel like it's been very successful.
Mm-hmm. I think that our two departments were two of, I think, maybe the first GAs that happened. And after that, even because most people, at least in my department, are in other departments as well, they emailed us asking for our strike motion to present to their own student associations. Mm-hmm. And their issue, I know that the English Students Association, and I think there was one other, they had GAs, but they didn't make quorum, and so they couldn't actually vote on the motion. But, like, once those first initial seeds were kind of planted in our first GAs, like, there was a lot more kind of, like, this is a thing that could happen, we could do this, and then sometimes it was just because not enough people showed up for the GA.
Yeah, and as we were saying, like, for us in the geography department, this was essentially our first General Assembly. And so there wasn't necessarily that the infrastructure there from a constitution perspective to really to be able to vote on something like this. We kind of did have to kind of go with the flow in a way, adjust and adapt. We also held actually two General Assemblies. We held the first one last week, and at that time, we set a quorum of 25% of our department. And we recognized quite quickly after that that was kind of a difficult target to achieve. And so we went back to the drawing board and we were thinking, okay, well, you know, how do we prepare ourselves for the next one? And so we gave ourselves just a few days to really mobilize ourselves in the department to really promote this in a way that, you know, we can spread the word to more students. And so really, you know, it was a huge learning experience, not only for the first one, but all the way up to the second one and now. So these have been really valuable lessons that we will take forward. And hopefully in order to get closer to what, you know, Concordia was able to achieve, you know, these are the necessary steps, the foundation to being able to do that.
Yeah, actually, I mean, on that note, I was really interested in kind of hearing of this framed as sort of a, you know, can we have a strike right now? What would happen if we tried? Like, how are the students feeling? Like, this almost being a tester. And I don't want to take away from the fact that I think this actually was effective and very powerful. But especially on the McGill side, you know, I think people have been feeling very discouraged about, you know, like, can we even pull this off? And so it is really interesting to hear it kind of framed as, like, let's test the waters a bit and see, like, as, you know, a capacity movement building kind of thing. So given that, what have you learned? Like, what are you taking away from this as kind of like a movement building exercise, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, some of the things that we noticed is that surprisingly, despite, you know, the magnitude of what these effects and these changes would lead to, there's a significant lack of knowledge around how these will actually impact students, especially in the short to medium term. We think of these things as being kind of far-flung, far out, you know, affecting future cohorts of students, but really this is pretty soon. And if, you know, and so that knowledge of the impacts have just not been, I think, well articulated to students. And I think we've noticed that as we've been striking, is that there's a lot of people who are genuinely curious and wanting to know and learn about what is going on, and also understanding the perspective, well, what are we able to achieve, right? They see all of these conversations going on with you know, government leaders and, you know, again, school administration. But then that leaves kind of a hole, like thinking, well, what are we supposed to do then? You know, if these guys are taking all this time and effort to having these conversations leading to, you know, kind of iffy results, you know, in terms of actually getting to that bottom, to that end goal, then how are we as students going to be able to achieve of something more significant? So it's been a lot of learning from actually understanding the students' perspective of not knowing as much as we thought they maybe do.
Yeah, I feel like it was a very, very fruitful learning experience. And I think the two categories that I'd say roughly the learning took place in is, one, how do we organize ourselves? Even from the perspective of how do you organize a picket, even us coming up with the idea that there's a certain spot you go to talk to one certain people who has all the lists of all the classes. How do we get those lists? We were making spreadsheets for days. And then how do we interpret the spreadsheets, and how do we interpret how many people need to be dispatched? There was information about how we do the mechanics of a strike that is unique to our circumstances as a university. And then I think the other thing that I feel like was even more interesting was learning about how people are feeling about A, tuition hikes, B, strikes, and also their own role as students, but also as professors in student activism, and also what power people believe they have to make change around this issue. Because a lot of the thorniest conversations we had were on the picket lines. And honestly, the conversations we had with students were interesting and fruitful. And some people really wanted to go to class, but most people were like, oh, this is happening, I'm going to go home, you know. Like apathy to support. But the conversations with the professors that really wanted there to be class and to not cross the picket line, I found were very telling in terms of, because a lot of what I experienced in the Fine Arts building, for example, we canceled 100 out of 106 classes.
Wow.
I'm including the ones that are hopefully happening right now because I'm being optimistic about them, but they haven't technically happened yet. It's not including people who went on Zoom, which is crossing the picket line, I'm going to tell you right now, but a lot of people think that it's not. So we successfully picketed many, many classes, but those six classes were very interesting because a lot of what we heard from professors was, I support the strike. I support you guys, but my class is an exception. I heard a lot of my class is a social justice class, and so therefore my students need to be here for the greater good, and so you can make an exception for me. But also a lot of people saying, why are you protesting the institution that is fighting for you against the government? Go to Quebec City, march in the streets. There really is a lack of understanding of what a student strike is doing and how it can impact change. And it's so interesting also to hear people say, I support the strikes, but I'm going to cross. And it makes me think there's a lack of common knowledge about what a strike is, how it works, and what it means to support a strike or be in solidarity with it. And so I think that has been such a learning experience, and it will help us sharpen our message and make sure that we can learn from that so that we can communicate clearly to people who, a lot of these professors say, like, I'm a part-time professor, I'm scared for my job with this. Mm-hmm. And my thought is less like, you know, how dare you cross the picket line, you know, I hate you, and more, how do we get you on our side? And I mm-hmm. think that's what we wanted to focus on for this first strike, is how do we get more people to join us instead of just being like, what an inconvenience this right. is to me.
Yeah, I think that in both of those veins, though, like, my goal for RSUS this entire experience was, like, if we pass a strike motion, to me, that is a successful, like, mobilization of people. And everything that comes after that is just bonus, because, like, we have been a very, as I mentioned before, like, we haven't been that active in the last couple of years. And so, to me, if enough people showed their support on that first day, that was my goal, was we passed the motion. And I think, aside from learning the learning curve of writing a strike motion and dealing with the bureaucracy of student associations and general assemblies and brushing up on my Robert's rules, it was really exciting to see the side of the faculty, because our school is a very special place in the School of Religious Studies, and the faculty are a huge part of our community in a way that I think is rare for a lot of faculty or different departments. And there were times in which I basically had to talk to the head of our school explaining that this isn't against you, this is for you and for your school, because we love it so much and we recognize that our faculty is particularly at risk as a result of these. We never want you to think that this is going against you. Like, we're doing it for this institution. And the outpouring of support that we got from our professors was really amazing. Even after we were told that we couldn't have professors cancel classes anymore, we got multiple emails saying, we're canceling it anyway, and I don't care what the head of our school says. Mm-hmm. And it was really exciting to kind of bond with our faculty in that way and kind of make that connection in a way that I don't think we would have had previously, and kind of come to terms with, like, what I've been preaching this whole time is that this affects everyone. It doesn't just affect future students. It doesn't just affect smaller departments. It doesn't just affect even Anglophone universities. And it doesn't just affect, like, Montreal. And I guess narrowing it, like, reiterating that message throughout the week has, I think, brought a lot of people, as we were saying previously, like, just understanding what it actually means. A lot of people don't know what those tuition hikes mean. It means that, to them, people who come here in the future will have to pay more money. Mm-hmm. But what does that mean for the lasting impacts of our institutions? And I think that the conversations that I had throughout this past week surrounding those things has been really insightful and very, I guess, inspiring to make that community with other people around me.
Well, I mean, the good thing about everything you're saying is that it seems that you've had a great rate of success, both in something that's gained a ton of momentum already and something that's just in the process of getting momentum, you know, testing the waters and doing all of this, which is a really great thing. But, you know, the question I have is what's the specific benefit of striking specifically? You know, what's the strategic value of striking? And kind of in the vein of what you were saying, why strike at the school specifically? You know, why not strike in front of Legault's office, for example, or why not strike in front of government institutions, things like that? What's the value of focusing on the schools themselves?
I think this question has been asked to me like about 100 times in the last 3 days, and it was honestly hard to answer the first time, but I feel like I'm getting a little more comfortable with it. I think there's been a social issue recently that has really exposed the limits of what we consider like government-sanctioned democratic dissent. So I think we've learned, you know, in the last few months that sending letters to your MPs, meet going to your MP's office, calling your MP, hosting a protest in the streets, the things that we're told we're supposed to do to enact change or oppose a law are not effective. They are not working because mass mobilization against Canadian complicity in war, for example, is just falling on completely deaf ears. And so I think a lot of people have lost faith in those methods. I think also the petition, you know, 33,000 signatures, a record in terms of the National Assembly, in terms of petition turnout, nothing ever came from it. And so I think the biggest problem and the reason why a lot of people think why strike at your own school is due to the fact that people have been conditioned to begin to see themselves as students as like a consumer relation. Like, I bought this class, and so I want to enjoy it. Well, you know, this is my, I'm a customer of the university, and I deserve to enjoy what I purchased.
Yeah.
And I think it goes against an older version that 2012 really built on, which is, as students, we're not consumers, we're actually workers to be. We're workers in sort of we're in a pupa, in a cocoon, and we're going to emerge as workers, and the university is baking us until we're ready to be taxpayers, until we're ready to contribute to Quebec society. And I think in the same way that labor unions, they're like, we make the world run through our work, and so if we withhold that work, we disrupt business as usual, and everybody has to stop and listen to us. Student strikes function the same way. If we actually see ourselves as students, as workers to be, and that's definitely how the government sees us. That's why they subsidize tuition, because they need professionals to be, you know, journalists and doctors and teachers. They need universities to churn out grads for Quebec to keep going. And when we grind those mechanisms to a halt, it causes major problems for them economically. And we've learned that we will not be listened to, especially by the Legault government, unless we disrupt business as usual. And so I really encourage people, you're not a customer of the university. The university and the state, because our universities are still public institutions for now, are using us. And we can leverage that. It's actually, as students, it's the greatest form of power that we have. And it's time to use it, because nothing else is working.
Wow.
Actually, I did have a question about that, just in terms of your relationship to the university administrations, because they're kind of like, I totally see the argument about how this is, there kind of has like an economic push to this, kind of, where it's like, you know, you're withholding your intellectual labor, you're kind of, you explained it better than I can. But I feel like the university admins are in like kind of a weird position, like between those two, like government and students. So like, how are you seeing this? How do you see them? Are they on your side? Like, where do they fit into this movement?
I mean, I went in with the direct intention of, I want this to be like a completely like acceptable protest, and I want it to be a completely bureaucratically like not going to have any problems. If McGill security gets called today, I'm leaving. Like, I was not willing to deal with that. And so I made sure that every single thing that we did fell within those like bureaucratic processes, because I've worked for the student society. I've worked with McGill admin, and I know that that just isn't going to work. And especially because of our institution, we're working with our faculty. And again, like, this sort of protest that goes outside of those lines kind of reiterates that it seems like we're against them. And so I, for the sake of our, I guess, the survival of such a small group of people that we had who were striking, it didn't seem fruitful for us to go beyond the bounds of, like, what is, I guess, acceptable forms of student processes, and outside of what the admin would find acceptable. Just for my own, I guess, I was afraid for us, because I didn't want us to get shut down.
which maybe was an oversight and that I was not willing to, like, be more, I guess, like, about, like, civil disobedience. But I, because of my relationship working with admin in the past, I wasn't willing to take that risk for our very small department, who has really no, like, structure that can support us if we were to get into trouble with the administration or with our school.
I think that maybe I'm speaking too soon, but I think Muggs was kind of like the in-between between religious studies and Concordia. Like, I wouldn't say that 100% of our faculty was on board. I think we definitely kind of tested the waters in terms of, like, student government, faculty, administration. We were not, like, we, you know, had security at our pickets. They didn't necessarily do much, but they were there. And, you know, we were setting up in places that maybe we weren't supposed to be setting up in, putting up posters, places that we weren't supposed to be putting up posters in. But, like, I think maybe that was a question of time as well. We only had a day to plan what we were doing, which, you know, now we have learned that it's not enough time.
Nah.
But I think also, like, ultimately it's hard to get everyone on board when the professors, and, like, feel like, you know, if their classes are being disrupted, that's really difficult. And then the administration as well, like, we would like to have more conversations with them, I think, about how Absolutely. To make this all, like, because we're all on the same side,
right.
I think.
Yeah. I think in terms of Concordia, we had a certain orientation because we were, you know, mostly targeting the government through our institution, mm-hmm. but we also had additional demands for Concordia University. And the thing that I want to highlight is both McGill and Concordia have instituted these bursary programs, and that yeah. was announced saying, oh, well, tuition hikes are okay because now we're offering these bursaries that will sort of subsidize or mitigate the effects of it. And to me and to a lot of other organizers, when we saw that announced, we interpreted it as almost they were giving up on us. They had accepted yes. that totally. It had it wasn't going to be able to, you couldn't fight it. Yeah. It was going to happen. So the biggest worry is enrollment, right? And this is the time that people enroll for schools. This is when admissions is happening. So you don't want to scare off as many people as possible. You want to motivate people to still enroll. And so I think announcing those bursaries was mostly motivated by mitigating the drop in enrollment. But to me, it's not actually fixing it at all. It's damage control, but it doesn't cover international students. And I think a lot of the focus has been on out of province. And international students are at risk of being sort of thrown under the bus or forgotten. But it's just for out of province students. And it's a grade-based system. So if you have an A, I believe at Concordia, it completely covers the increase, but if you're a B student, it doesn't completely cover. Wow. And if you have a difficult semester, if you lose your A standing, you'll lose that bursary. But we all know that Concordia is also in financial free fall. That is public information. And we don't know where they're going to get this money from.
Right. Yeah,
so yeah. if they have to pay for these bursaries and they are struggling financially, what we think is going to happen is there's going to be cuts.
Yeah.
Cuts
yeah.
to programs, cuts to totally. Staff, layoffs. And so we're demanding transparency from the Concord administration. But we want them to fight for us harder.
Absolutely.
Because it's not yeah. enough.
Can I touch on that quickly?
Yeah, yeah.
Of course.
I think, yeah, the main problem, I think, that why I got so involved in this personally was the idea that, because McGill has essentially promised that there will be intense financial losses. They said point yeah. blank, we're going to lose $90 million yeah, annually. Have fun. But also provided absolutely no assurance of things being safeguarded, of just saying, we're going to lose all this money. That sucks for you guys.
Yeah.
And like, especially in our school, we're a very small school, and not every school has a school of religious studies. Not every school, quote unquote, needs a religious studies school based on the amount of money mm-hmm. that we bring McGill in the long term. And so there was a genuine concern that this lack of transparency, as you were saying, could range anywhere from things continue as usual to our school is shut down, and we were not told. And so part of what we have been asking for to the administration is promising that safeguarding. What are you going to do to protect our programs? What are you doing to protect our faculty? Which was why we were so working alongside them, because like that's the first place you're going to cut people, is you're just going to lay off professors who are seen as extraneous. Mm-hmm. And I grew to love my school and the unique opportunities I've had through this school so much. And the idea that in the future, other students won't get that same experience that I had made me so disheartened and so sad that I went from being sad to being angry. And then through this whole process, I've just like, I think, reinforced some of the love I have for my programs, honestly. Yeah.
Well, in discussing strategy and all this, and, you know, we've been seeing a lot of callbacks to 2012, which is the last, you know, big student manifestation movement. I mean, two of you in the studio have red squares on you. You have earrings that are matching the red square, of course, very fashionably nice. What are you guys taking from that movement? Like, what kind of similarities have you seen? What are you drawing on? What are you trying to correct, if anything? Yeah, what can you say on that?
I think definitely, you know, 2012, it's easy to want to harken back to because it won, you know, because it was big, and it's a bit of a scare tactic. You know, when you mention 2012, I even noticed, you know, CBC reporters are like, I see you're wearing a red square, and they get a little nervous.
Watch out for tear gas. Yeah.
You know, 2012 was contentious and a lot of people were mad about 2012, but ultimately like it got the goods. And so I think it's part of our history. It's also, it provided a model. It legitimized student strike as a tactic, which I think is really significant. But for me, when I think like we're remembering our history, the movement sort of lineage that we have when we wear a red square. But for me, I also think of it as a reminder that it's going to be a little bit different this time. Mm-hmm. Because one of the big takeaways from 2012 was they kept the Quebec resident tuition the same. They did not raise it. It's the lowest tuition that is paid by provincial residents in Canada. But what they did was they jacked up the international student tuition, and they invented this like concept really that international students were going to subsidize domestic students. And so the way that it works is when you pay international tuition, each university, they take that tuition and they give the money back to the government. They take, well, now if the increases happen, they'll take $20,000 and give it to the Quebec government. And then I believe the Quebec government subsidizes every domestic student by $11,000. So technically, international students are paying other people's tuition. Mm-hmm. And they developed that system as a way to cut costs on keeping the tuition low for domestic students. And that has been, Concordia raised international tuition with it very, very quietly last spring, and not really anything was said about it. They're not raising international tuition, but they're raising that amount they take so that they'll have to raise it. And we don't even know how much. So for me, I have to think the reason why they're not raising tuition for everyone in Quebec is that they know if they divide and conquer and make it also a language culture war, that there won't be a united student movement and it'll be easier to do austerity ultimately for everyone. And it also is in line with the xenophobic, anti-immigrant and racist sort of agenda that Legault is pushing every way that he can. And so for me, I think it's very important that we remember that we can't leave anyone behind this time. Mm-hmm. And that's why it is a united student movement, but we also have to center the people who are most affected and not give way to these sort of xenophobic narratives about who deserves to be here and who doesn't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Just one last question for you guys. So we kind of spoke about this a little bit earlier, but what is next for your movement? What are you looking forward to? Or what should people be looking forward to?
Well, we are hoping to get a lot more departments on board, more student societies. In the conversations that we've been having with students, we've been asking them, you know, what department are you a part of? Do you know your student society? And we've just been trying to get them to, like, learn about the idea of a general assembly, of a motion, of a strike. Because, you know, we have strength in numbers, so if we can pull off a much bigger strike later on in the year, then I think it's going to be very effective for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that the main thing that this, again, what you've been saying is, like, it opened the door for us to see this possibility of a bigger movement in the future. And I think that if we could have, if I lived in an ideal world, I would want to see striking at a faculty level and not just putting it on the onus of departments, because we don't have the resources that those faculties do in terms of, like, mobilizing people, in terms of communication channels, in terms of funding different parts of this. And from what my conversations with AUS, they've basically said, we aren't going to do it, you department should. And then separately, you can all strike together. But as we've seen, because in the McGill situation, we're so scattered, we're so fragmented, it's really not, I would argue, not as effective as, like, a more, I guess, cohesive, large body of people. And I would like to see that in the future. And I do believe that it is possible. I just think that it'll take a lot of convincing from us who've already gone through it to make it happen.
Yeah, and I just want to highlight, like, as we've been talking now, we've been talking about a lot of the challenges that we've had, but it's very important to not, you know, to go over or to glaze over the great successes that we've achieved.
Yeah.
This was the first time we really had kind of this united voice from the students' perspective regarding this issue. And I think there's a lot to take from that and to be proud of what we've been able to do up until now. And there's really great reason to believe that this could be much bigger, especially given how short of a turnaround we had at McGill to really getting this off the ground. We were incredibly just impressed by the reception we've received and kind of the reach we've been able to get with minimal resources.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, of course, while there's a lot of work to improve, it's important to recognize what we've been able to achieve thus far and to really see this as a platform at it can become really great. And we have now hopefully more voices behind us, hopefully from more departments, to really get something going here for all of McGill.
Yeah, I completely agree that it's important to also just underscore how exciting this is. And also, even from a Concordia standpoint, I know everybody thinks that we're lawless over there compared to the oppressive atmosphere that permeates this McGill campus. Even as I'm here, I feel the weight of it pressing down on me.
Sorry.
But it dulls over time.
It's really, I didn't think we were going to have 11,000 students go on strike, even myself. And what it feels like is things are waking up.
Right.
We can't underscore the impact of the pandemic and the switch to online learning and what it did for our student movements and what it did in terms of our department associations. A lot of department associations were dormant, did not have any executives, were not operating anything, or they weren't having GAs. They were maybe just running events. And now a lot of department associations just elected a new exec for the purpose of a strike vote. Mm. So we are getting this engagement, and you feel people coming in person, especially to a meeting, and getting involved, getting engaged, becoming friends with each other. And it makes me think about what it must have been like to be at Concordia, because I started in 2020. I never knew what it was like beforehand.
Yeah.
That feeling of the energy of people meeting on the student building, running in and out of the CSU offices, that engagement is really waking up. We really struggled to reignite that fire. We only had 7 people on CSU Council out of 26 people for an entire year. No one wanted to be involved in the student movement. And now people do. And I really hope we can continue that momentum and use that momentum to allow students to learn through their participation in the student movement, but also keep the pressure up
because we're going to need it. We're going to need it.
Yeah, and just to build off of that idea of momentum, it's one thing that is really great is we've seen just in the last few weeks in January, the government already kind of clawing back some of their initial, clawing back from their initial statement. And so they've already reduced that hike by 30%. Mm. And that was in what seemingly felt like a few months and a few conversations with some of the administration. So we really think that we can use this momentum to our advantage and to make, again, as I said, the voices of the students heard. And then hopefully, as we've been discussing here, hopefully with more help and resources from the administration as well, we can really achieve what we are hoping to get.
That's wonderful, guys. Thank you so much for coming through, contributing everything you've contributed. Good luck in the continuation of your strikes and everything. Once again, I'd like to say this is CKUT. You're listening to Off the Hour Live, 90.3 FM. And now we're going to transition to some on-the-ground journalism.
Yeah. Thank you so much, guys, for being here. I feel like I learned so much just from hearing you guys talking. We're going to play a clip from actually the a picket line at Concordia, which was that happened yesterday. Ghazal, who's also a part of the News Collective, and I went to go to this event called the Politics of Education Funding. So I'm going to play that now. We had a little confrontation with a professor.
Currently, the Geography Student Association is on strike along with some others. Okay, I don't know if you guys heard, but
So that was the scene at a picket line outside a political science class at Concordia University yesterday. In this clip, you hear some frustrated students suggesting to Professor Eric Buzzetti that he teach the class right there outside of the classroom. The student picketers then started singing. They eventually successfully prevented the class from happening after the professor called security, gave his students an extension for their upcoming essay, and left. Here is more of an earlier conversation between Professor Buzzetti and the picketers.
Not all the students voted in favor, but enough students that the department has decided to go on strike. So all of the poli-sci classes from yesterday, today, and tomorrow are being picketed.
My colleagues have had their classes, so I just
wanted to say that's surprising to me. I think there's only maybe one or two that ended up happening, but all of the other political science classes are being picketed. Like, we've been picketing them all day, and yesterday, and tomorrow.
Well, I don't know. I didn't do a survey.
That's all right, of course.
You've made your point. You're going to deprive these students of their...
That's not the point of this.
The point,
but that is what you're doing.
We're trying to sensitize people about the tuition hikes, right?
So I understand.
And your jobs also might be taken away. Classes are being cut by 10%. All this stuff. And you're
I understand, but at this point, I'm here to teach students. And that's what I would like to do.
I understand.
I can respect what you're doing. It doesn't even mean that I disagree with you, but.
Of course.
At some point, it is what you're doing is a contravention of the code, of Concordia's code.
Are allowed to have a picket line. With our experiences today and yesterday, calling security doesn't mean that we're going to not be picketing. You still won't be allowed to cross a picket line.
I understand that, but they will take your names, and then the question will be whether those names
are allowed.
No, I understand.
I understand that the student association voted on this very last minute. A lot of you didn't get to attend the GA, didn't get to have your opinions heard. You might have had really long commutes. You might have had other classes today that are being canceled. That's unfortunate. The communication should have been better. You should have been more informed. The students should have been more informed.
There was no message. From anyone.
And that's not okay. You should have been more informed. We are here picketing this classroom.
I understand. I can respect what you do, but at the same time, you have to respect my
also my point of view, which is to defend the interests of the, I assume also many students would like to have a class.
Yeah, I understand. I think that, like, the interest of the student, though, is also to be part of this strike and this movement that historically has helped us keep education affordable in Quebec. Mm-hmm. It's going to affect all of us. I think that students haven't been as informed about this movement. If you are interested in being and learning more about it, we have a hub on the 7th floor in the CSU Art Nook. There's free food. You can come attend lectures. You can come learn about it. We're not trying to take power away from you. I think that there was a miscommunication and a lack of communication happening, but we encourage students that, you know, you should be also trying to get involved because this will affect you in the long term.
So basically what's happening here right now is that the professor has sort of spread misinformation that we're not, like, part of student unions and that this is not a student union mandated strike. So this is really bad and weird for a political science class for, like, not the correct information about the politics to be going around. So I'm kind of concerned.
After the students left, we spoke with Professor Buzzetti about his response to the picketers.
I know that today you were supposed to have a class, mm-hmm. and it was blocked by a picket line, mm-hmm. and you can go through the rest of it.
There's not very much to say. We were prevented from entering the classroom, and obviously we're not going to create a situation where their students could get hurt by pushing and shoving, so I have to cancel class. Students can make the point about tuition, and they can pick it, that's fine, but they can't stop access, block access to the classroom, which is what was being done here, or is being done here. And so I've called security. Security is delaying in its arrival. But presumably, eventually, they will come here, and then they will take down the names of the students who are in breach of the Code of Rights and Responsibilities, and then the question is whether anything will happen, and we'll see. At that point.
But my understanding is that there was a motion for a strike that was passed by the student union.
That's what I've heard. There's been very little communication, frankly, from, I've heard no communication from the students, also from the administration of the university. No guidelines, no nothing. So that's what I've heard, although I don't have knowledge, firsthand knowledge of that. I don't know who attended this assembly, there are hundreds of students in political science. How many people actually voted on this? I have no idea. But I've heard that, yes.
Right. And I would argue that the whole point of a strike and the solidarity behind it is to make sure that people are not penalized and their student IDs are not taken and their names aren't written down, right? So would you say that basically what you're asking security to do goes against exactly what...
Well, but you have too narrow a view of who's being penalized. You saw there were earlier 40, 50 students here, some of whom had driven from the South Shore to attend class, and they're being penalized. So, you know, things are complicated. Yeah, it's not so simple as to say that I'm doing is penalizing the students. There are rules. No university can survive, exist for any length of time unless you abide by some basic rules, one of which is that you can peacefully protest, and I support that, fully support that. But you can't block access to buildings, to classrooms. Okay, yeah. Yeah, I am. Sure. I guess, all right. But just 2 seconds. You made me wait.
I have one last question
sure.
for you. You said multiple times that they've made their point. You know, Lego's not going to hear the small polysite.
Well, I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
But earlier
I said that.
Yeah. And so what is an alternative means of mobilization that you would recommend to the students who are effectively against the tuition?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, protesting, sure. You can march. You can do a number. So that's quite possible. But I think blocking access to classrooms is unfortunate because you are undermining education. I mean, those students will not get what they would have gotten today. And I'm as a teacher, I do think I have something to teach. So, you know, they didn't get that. They won't get that, at least not the same version. So, but that doesn't mean that I necessarily disagree with the larger point, or that I agree with the student hike, the tuition hike. That's an entirely different question. One can agree with the underlying issue and still disagree with the means.
When the security officer arrived, she did not take any student names and even stood in solidarity with the picketers.
Kind of call okay. us, because I know from earlier, I didn't have a chance to come see you guys
oh,
earlier.
Great.
But
yeah.
If there's anything, you guys can call us too if you need anything.
Thank you. That's yeah.
Oh.
What's your name?
Security
Sorry.
With us! Yeah.
Likewise, the TA of the class was also in solidarity with the picketers.
So the teaching assistants and research assistants at Concordia, they're represented by a union called CREW. They have expressed solidarity with the student strikes that are going on and have asked their staff members never to cross the picket line. So I think that's probably why the TA had expressed disagreement with the professor. Right.
And they were like a labor union.
Exactly.
Going by stricter rules. But my question is, there was so much being said about communication and apologies that members of the picket line were announcing to the crowd. We're so sorry for the lack of communication. Can you maybe elaborate a bit more on what that process was like? What is the communication that you're apologizing for?
Yeah, so every department itself has a student association that represents it. That's how we vote to go on strike, through general assemblies held by the members of those associations. Every department handles it differently. We've had some issues with the communication that's come out of the political science department because they had their general assembly and voted to go on strike on Tuesday evening, and we started striking on Wednesday. There was an email that was sent out to students, but from what I've been told, it went to a lot of students' junk mail, so a lot of people weren't aware. And so we do apologize to the students who, you know, have made the trek to campus and are committed to learning. We don't want to disrupt people's, you know, learning environments, but unfortunately we've had to take escalating measures in order to have our voices heard, and we'll continue to do so. But it's really important that students also take the initiative to seek out information about what's going on. It is publicly available on the student union's Instagram accounts, on our websites, all that sorts of stuff.
So while students were picketing, as you just heard, the Concordia Student Union was hosting events and workshops related to the strikes. We sat in on a presentation about the politics of education funding and learned about the economics behind the tuition hikes and why striking actually puts a very real economic pressure on the government.
Coalition Avenir de Québec of François Legault has said he wants to raise tuition fees for out-of-province Canadian students to $17,000. He says he's doing it to protect the French language. It's really important that you know that this is not about language. This is part of a three-pronged plan to make tuition expensive in Quebec for everybody, because just like everywhere else, right-wing politicians are trying to privatize and sell university to the highest bidder. But as we established earlier in this presentation, it's hard to increase tuition fees in Quebec because the students fight back. So they can't just do what they did in, say, 2012, when the Liberal government of Jean Charest attempted to raise tuition fees by 75%. There was a massive province-wide student strike that lasted 6 months. 300,000 students did not go to class for that entire time. Not only did they defeat the hike, but they brought down a majority government. That's the power of students. That is your power. You have it. And that's why the CAC is doing something smarter. They're not just trying an across-the-board fee hike for everybody. They're doing a divide-and-conquer strategy. And this protecting the French language is phase two of the plan, not phase one. Phase one came from the Liberal government when they returned to power under Philippe Couillard. So they were elected again in 2014. In 2018, that was when phase one started. Liberals started this. This is when they deregulated international student tuition fees that year. Also introduced KPI university funding, as we talked about earlier. So you can see this is a link article from the time. There was protests here at Concordia. I was part of them. We were not successful stopping them because it's just the international students. They don't pay taxes here. Why should we have to care about that? You know, international students themselves, a lot of them don't know their rights here, or they're afraid to speak out for citizenship reasons. We weren't able to stop it. That's phase one. We're there already. Now we're in phase two. So here we have the headline, the capital, you know, increase of tuition fees. The large presence of Anglophone students is a threat to French, according to François Legault. It's not about that. That is politicking. That is divide and conquer politics. He does not give a single flying fuck. If he cared about French language, he would be supporting francisation programs. Once phase two happens, because they've already got the international students paying a lot, and if they can get the francophone students to not care, not think the social contract of Quebec has been broken, it's just, you know, those out-of-province Anglophone students. Who likes them anyway? They're annoying. Who likes McGill? Mark my words, phase three will come in a couple of years from now. and you will see this argument being made. If international students pay high fees, and Canadian province students pay high fees, and students every other province of Canada is paying high fees, isn't it just fair that Quebecois francophones should also pay their fair share? Why are we doing this? So when you fight for blocking this tuition fee hike now, you're not just fighting for yourself. And people who are not affected by this hike should be fighting the hike, because it's going to be them next. And there will be no one left to stand with you once you reach phase three. All you need to do is convince the government that you're crazy enough to let them fail you, and you put them in a different position. You're not just calling on them to do the right thing. You're not calling them to make a moral choice. It doesn't matter that you're right. You put them in a bind where they have a choice between one expense, giving in to the students' demands, or a larger expense, losing that investment that's already been made in the students. They've already paid for your education this year. You'll either get the desired output of an educated workforce, or they won't. They'll lose the investment and you fail. So that gives you leverage against the government if you're able to act collectively against that.
Don't you care? You will be just right.